Hello friends, we are starting with chapter 10, Organizational Structure and Design. So let me share the learning objectives at the beginning. We are going to cover in this chapter what is organizational structure and what are the different elements of organizational structure, the different designs and the models of organizational structure, and why do structures differ and what are the determinants of the structures. And the most important one is the impact of organizational structure on the employee behavior. How does one react to these structures? These are very, very important. At the start itself, we are sharing the objectives in front of you. Let's proceed. Let's start with the definition. So what do you understand when you hear the term organizational structure? What is it that comes to your mind? An organizational structure refers to the manner in which the various job tasks are being divided, grouped, and coordinated. So everybody brings a different set of skills and knowledge and abilities with them, and hence everyone needs to be grouped in such a fashion so that everybody utilizes their respective knowledge, skills, and attitudes. So the established patterns of relationships between the component of an organization, control and authority pattern. So structure distinguishes the parts of an organization and it completely demarcates the relationship between them. This is what has been described by Wilson and Rosenfield as the definition of organizational structure. So it's the manner to which of the various job tasks are being formally divided, grouped, and coordinated. Fair enough? Let's move on. So they have also shared the elements of organizational structure. So there are, so when we talk about the elements, there are six key elements that they have spoken about. When it comes to organizational structures, these are the six elements that are there in front of you. Division of labor, departmentalization, chain of command, span of control, centralization and decentralization, and formalization. So now if I ask you one by one about these six elements, I'm sure all of you would have a fair idea. In the literal terms, even if you do not know from the corporate standpoint, but you definitely would be aware from the literal standpoint. So when you talk about division of labor, what do you understand by that? So when you talk about division of labor is the extent to which activities within an organization are being bifurcated into several steps. So if you have different steps that are there in front of you, you know what to do when. The key to split a job into numerous steps and each step is assigned to separate individual to complete. So everybody, as I mentioned earlier as well, everybody brings to the table their respective knowledge, skill and abilities to do a particular job. So how this is to be divided amongst the people so that everybody utilizes their own knowledge, skill and attributes to the job and bring in their best. And that's where you are defined as a competent person in the job. Through this, it utilizes very limited skills of the worker sometimes, because you may be bestowed with 10 different knowledge, skill and abilities that are there with you. But out of the 10 skills that you have, only about 5 of them are getting used and utilized in the respective job that you've got. And you will be performing efficiently. When employees do specialized work, they are very, very confident. They know what they are doing and they feel good about that. Why do we need specialization? Any idea about that? So we need specialization so that we utilize our necessary skills that are there available with us. And there is a difference between what you're able to do and what the organization is expecting you to do. So to be able to match to the requirement of the job, you always create specializations. So hence, specialization helps us in utilizing the respective skills to the knowledge, skill and attribute required for the job. So now second key element, which is your departmentalization. Now, what do you mean by departmentalization? So From the literal point of view, if you hear the word department, what does it come to your mind? It is about different departments that are there in an organization that you go. At home also, we have a different department, right? We have somebody to do the cooking, somebody to do the household, and somebody to do the shopping. So that demarcation is called as your departmentalization. After splitting the tasks based on your specialization, you're there, for example, at home. Let's consider you're at home and you are not a person who would like to sit home and do the households, and you like to finish the work which is outside. So that's your specialization. And depending on that specialization, you have been given the task that all the things, whether it comes to your getting milk, getting groceries, getting vegetables, and if at all some mails or some bill payments, all that is your duty. Clear? Because you are specialized in that skill, you are bestowed with that skill, hence you have been given the responsibility of that. Clear with the departmentalization idea? So hence in the organization also, departmentalization is basically splitting the tasks based on the specialization that people have, and they are grouped as common tasks for the coordination purpose. The basis of grouping the tasks for coordination is known as your departmentation. So departmentalization can be done in three different ways. First is your function wise, second is your product or service wise, and territory or geography wise. Clear? So I'm sure all of you are aware of each of these demarcations that we are talking about. Function, product, geography. These are the three things that should come to your mind the moment you hear departmentalization. Function, product, geography. So now what is function-wise departmentalization? A function-wise departmentalization is the most common method that is there in any organization. A common method of grouping the activities because of the functions being performed over there. All right. So example here would be engineering department, your accounting department, your supply chain management department, your marketing department. So these are completely function-wise divided departmentalization. So in functional departmentalizations, similar specialists are grouped together. For example, all the engineers, all the software developers would work together in the engineering department. All the maintenance engineer will be clubbed together, given a specific job task and the project to accomplish a particular task, and they all would be working together. So similar kind of expertise would be possessed by the co-workers over there. Yeah, and that this helps in utilizing skills very, very well. Yeah, so that's the function-wise departmentalization. What is the next departmentalization? Product or the service-wise departmentalization. So this is another method which could be where the jobs could be grouped by the type of product or the service that the organization offers. Okay, for example, P&G places each major product such as Tide, Pampers, Pringles, with your potato chips, under one executive who has complete global responsibility for it. So depending on the market size, market share that this person is handling, the person is responsible for all these particular. So five product categories are being given the responsibility to manage. So globally, regardless of the region, regardless of the country, this particular person manages the accounts for all the five products. Yeah, so that's what is your product or service wise departmentalization. Now comes, what is the third one that we said? The three things that should come into our mind: function, product, and third is the geography. Now, when we talk about geography, now what is it that comes to your mind? So the moment we hear geography or territory, it's the regional thing that comes into our mind. Am I correct? Most of it is the, you know, the South team has done that. You know, when you go to an organization or even in the college, when you have your different houses, your red house, your blue house, your green house. So each house represents one particular geography. So that particular house is called as your regional departmentalization. Here it would be typically the North team, the South team, the West team, the Central team. So these are the basis of job, basis the geographical location, the teams have been divided in such a fashion that they fall under the respective territory. And each of the initiatives, each of the products that falls under that particular region will be able to manage that particular scheme of things. So no matter what it happens, when it goes wrong, something is happening in North. So everybody in the North team is supposed to completely conquer those challenges there. Unless and until within the bandwidth they are unable to manage, or there is a lack of expertise, that's when they call support from the South team or maybe from the Central team and take help to mitigate those risk factors, if any. Otherwise, a regional teams manages those. Yeah, so that example could be East, South, Central regional sales team. So they carry out, so each and every department, is each and every region is responsible for delivering all kinds of products and service related support items and provide all kinds of, take care of all kinds of challenges owing to that particular product in that particular region. Yeah. So regional teams are responsible for the regional activities. I hope that's clear now. We can wrap up with the three departmentalization, function-wise departmentalization, product-wise departmentalization, and the third one is your geographical departmentalization. So the process, how the process works, the category of departmentalization is based on the specific kind of customer the organization attempts to reach. Say, for example, the customer wants to reach out to the end consumer who are developing a particular software. Okay, so that's where Microsoft, for example, will reach out to that particular category of customers specifically and offer the products available within that category to, especially to that particular sector. And their target audience being that particular category. So that's where the departmentalization helps. So they departmentalize completely of that particular product, saying that, okay, this particular product range is meant for these developers. So that's how the process departmentalization happens. The rationale behind this is that the customers in each department have a common set of issues and the complaints. Okay, so you need not to have different SMEs, different subject matter experts for mitigating those challenges. So here what will happen is everybody will have similar kind of complaints, say software related issues, some escalation points that they want to discuss. They want to discuss some mainframe activities, which is particularly predominantly from the perspective of that particular process. So hence the process departmentalization works best here. The next one. Next key element that we have is the chain of command. What does the first thing comes to your mind when you talk about chain of command? Chain of command is nothing but the hierarchical structure of the organization. The chain of command is a hierarchy of authority that determines who is in charge of doing what. Okay, say for example, somebody is the HOD, so Vice President Products. So this particular is responsible for anything but the product of the organization. Anything that is related to the products is supposed to be handled by this, supposed to be taken care by this particular head of the department. Okay, so that's how the chain of command works. And two key elements of chain of commands are authority and unity of command. So authority refers to the power obtained formally, which has been given and bestowed and been written formally against this particular person. Okay, which has been given by the organization through proper channel. So that's the power of authority that the person has gained. The second one is the principle of unity of command. It aids in preserving the concept of an unbroken line of authority. Okay, so two things that you need to remember, two key elements of chain of command. First is the power of authority. The second is the principle of unity of command, which aids in preserving the concept of an unbroken line of authority. So continuing with the chain of command key element, so through you can see from, as you can see from the structure here, it shows who is responsible for what. So these are the top managers, you have middle managers, and you have frontline managers. Now, if the frontline manager has some work that he has to complete, or he has to take as get an escalation and an approval from his reporting manager, which would be your middle manager. But in case he is not able to get the respective attention, what he does is he has to now reach the top manager, which is sometimes being considered okay by some organizations, but some organizations do not prefer it. So you have to be very, very particular in understanding the laws over there. Okay, how does the chain of command and the how does the hierarchy metrics work over there? So that's where metrics come into place. And that's where the person has to be cognizant enough to be able to reach out to the top manager, or they should adhere to the proper channel of reaching out to this particular manager, because this person has given up saying that. So unless and until the person is sitting on it and not giving you any particular decision, you will still have to wait for that. And sometimes it is very time consuming, but we don't have a choice. So in an organization, that's how it works. Yeah. So that's what is your chain of command. Now comes your span of control. Now, when it comes to span of control, the first thing that comes to our mind is the number of subordinates that a manager would have. What is the number of people that you're managing? So that's what is called as your span of control. How many people are you directly or indirectly managing? Okay, so that's what is your span of control. And there are, in some cases, there could be, in some organization, there could be a very narrow span of control. Okay, where you can, your spans could be very closely monitored. So where one particular manager manages about 15 supervisors, okay, 15 floor executives maybe. So in that case, your supervision becomes very, very narrow. Yeah, and second, they make a vertical communication very, very cumbersome. Because of the increased levels of hierarchy, it reduces the pace of decision making and tend to isolate the senior management. So that's the disadvantages of a narrow span of control. Okay, and third is that they result in excessive close control and lower subordinate autonomy. So whoever is working under this manager becomes very, very tightly monitored, and the person finds it a little difficult because he's all the time on the radar. Okay, so every now and then he will be asked questions, every now and then he will be asked about giving a report, about sharing a status quo, a status report. So all these kind of monitoring mechanisms sometimes completely delineate the subordinate. So that could be one of the disadvantage. Okay, and the recent needs of the organization to reduce cost, cut overhead cost, speedy decision making, increasing flexibility, these are the 10 tends the organization towards wider span of control. So if you now read the news and whatever you have seen in the industries happening, you've seen that everybody is gunning towards reducing costs. So in that case, what they will do is they will operate from the wide span of control perspective because of the different overheads that are associated with this. Now, the fifth key element of organizational structure is centralization and decentralization. Now, what do you understand by decentralization and decentralization? So, from the literal point of view, central, which is means in one location, everything else flows. And the second is decentralization, where things are being disseminated. So that's the literal meaning of it. Now, when you talk about centralization here, it's more to do with the decision making. So decision making is with the management. The management decides what needs to be done. And once and for all, they share that. So this is the strategic decision that we have taken. We are going to reduce cost. We are going to work on financial prudence. So that's the management decision which has been shared, and it has been disseminated to the different teams to live and work upon those strategic instructions. Okay, so that's what is centralized centralization of organizational structure. Okay, the second thing, which is your decentralization. Here, the decision making is moved away from the central authority to the different chain of commands, okay, to the line, to the different levels of management, okay, for example, to the regional team. So every region, say for example, there is a bank which operates, and the bank has given the authority matrix. They have designed it in a very decentralized process where they have given authority to each regional head to take a particular decision pertaining to that particular region. Okay, so whatever happens, whatever decision needs to be made in that particular region, the regional head will supposed to make it, and not made by the central authority which sits in the head office. Okay, so this makes the organizations much more quicker, much more faster, and much more agile as well. Okay, so nowadays a lot of organizations are moving towards decentralization. I hope all of you are with me. The last but not the least, the sixth key element that we have is now the formalization. Now, according to Price and Muller in 1986, they defined formalization as the extent to which the norms of an organization are formalized, and the extent to which a standardization of jobs are being done. That's what formalization as per Price and Muller. So under formalization, people are expected to handle the same input in exactly the same manner, resulting in a homogeneous and sustained output. Yeah, so here the same kind of, so it has been standardized in such a way, say for example, each sales manager has to contribute a minimum business of 5 lakhs every month. So this has been replicated to all sales manager. Everybody is supposed to contribute to that. If at all they are short of that contribution, there will be questions asked. Yeah, so that's what is, it results into a homogeneous and the output being very, very sustainable. Next is the level of formalization can vary widely within and among the organizations also. So the level of formalization can also vary depending on the kind of organization that you have. Yeah. So now we come into the organization design. I hope everybody is clear with the six key elements of organizational structure. So if you can just wrap up with it. So if I go back to the first slide. Now, when we talk about departmentalization, we spoke about departmentalization into three different, the most common ones, which are departmentalized in three different ways, function-wise, product-wise, and geography-wise. We spoke about chain of command, which is the authority matrix. Then we spoke about the span of control. We spoke about the centralization and decentralization of authority, and we spoke about the formalization. So I hope all of you are clear with the six key elements of organizational structure. Now we move on. We move on to the organizational design now. So organizational design are the formal system of defined for accountability purpose. Okay, so all organizational design any organization designs an organizational design process for choosing and implementing a structure configuration for an organization. This is what Charlotte Rayner and Gary Rees and Sally Rumbles have defined as. Okay, organizational design refers to the formal system of accountability. Okay, and which the key positions and the people who are there, who the top management who are there to set goals, receive information and influence the work of others. Okay, organizational, so if I have to put it in a definition by Robert Simons, here it is. As you can see here, organization design refers to the formal system of accountability and that defines key positions in an organization and legitimates the rights to set goals. So they are being authorized to set goals. It's not that somebody's sitting there and making his own decisions. They are authorized to set goals and they are authorized to receive information and influence the work of others. So if at all there is a scarcity of skills, is if there is a particular lack of knowledge, skills of attributes required in that particular project, that this team is supposed to bridge those gaps. So that is what Robert Simons have defined organizational design as. Organizational design involves the integration of structure, process, and people to support the implementation of strategy. So there are strategy which has been made in the top, and then you require the teams to completely work on them and get into the implementation and execution. See, otherwise it will only remain on the strategic level, unless and until you get onto the field and actually start implementing. So for that, the organizational design are divided into 9 different principles. What are these? Let's look at the 9 different principles that we have in front of us. The first and foremost is about focusing on the long-term strategic goals. What is the long-term strategic goal? What is it that the top management has decided as a strategy? And what are the implications of these long-term goals? The second is to assess. Now we understood the end in mind, which is your long-term strategic goal. Now what do? Now we understand, okay, that's the, if we have to reach this, which is our Y, what is the X now? We need to understand the current state. We need to understand. So now if we know the current state, only then we will be able to ascertain the distance to be accomplished. So if X if Y is say 3000 kilometers, currently where are we? To accomplish 3000 kilometers. So say for example, we have already covered 1000 kilometers. Okay, so and we have to undergo another 2000. So it's clear for us to anticipate the kind of economies of scale, the kind of resources, the kind of the authorities that you would require to accomplish that particular distance. So that's where we need to understand. We need to first focus on the long-term strategic goal. Second is to assess what the current state is, current state of the organization. The third is take a methodical approach. Do not go by the intuition. Can you see it here? Do not go by your intuition. It is a very big tendency of, it's a human tendency basically, to completely go by gut feel. This is what I feel. You know, this is what I have been doing, and in previously I have got results, so hence this would work. So what I will do is I will straight away hit the nail with what I have experienced in the past. So do not go by that. Please make sure that you take a methodical approach. Then what is the fourth step? Extend beyond the reporting structure. Do not just go by the hierarchy. It's good to follow. It's good to follow the hierarchy. It's good to follow the chain of commands, because that's how the organizational design works. However, in order to facilitate this implementation and the execution of goals, what you'll have to do is you'll have to sometimes go beyond the structure, right? Then what is the fifth principle? Focus on the roles first, then on the people. If you start focusing on the people, you may not completely head towards the goal, because you may just get deviated, because everybody has got a different set of expectations. You will have to do a lot of expectation management. So hence what you need to do is you need to focus on the role, and people will be changing. There'll be turnover, there'll be attrition. So people will be moving. So do not focus just on the people. Just focus on the role. If at all we are talking about marketing manager, just focus on the role marketing manager. For marketing manager, what is it that is required to be able to reach from X to Y? Because everybody has to reach from X to Y, right? So now to reach Y, what is it that we have to do for a marketing manager? So consider the focus on the role and not on the people. The next principle says that identify the requisite shifts that are required in mindset. This is very critical. So unless and until we are okay and we are adaptable and we are acceptable in our mindset, we will not be able to move towards the goal. Let's take an example. Early 2020, when we all have faced this global pandemic crisis, at that point in time, what happened to all of us? Everything went standstill, isn't it? And there are a lot of organizations who have shut shops. And there are organizations who have grown multifolds. Okay, and there are some organizations who have lost market shares and they have just kind of sustained over a period of time. Okay, so there are three types. So here, what is it that we want? So who could actually turn it around or who could even sustain? Even sustenance was a big deal at this point in time. And there are a lot of people who have, a lot of organizations who have shut shops because they couldn't adapt to the newer trends. They couldn't adapt to the new normal. Okay, because everything went on virtual. It became overnight, the way we work itself, the whole concept of workplace completely got turned around within a day, isn't it? Within a week, everybody started working from office. I remember in my previous, one of the roles that I was in, and I never could imagine, and I used to work very closely with operations. And I never saw the organization even trusting. Forget about the organization. Me, myself, never felt that my team could work remotely. But everybody in today's date, right from the first person in the organization to the last, have been working remotely. And it was challenging. It was difficult. It was a lot of change that you had to undergo. But yes, it was possible. Right. So hence it is a mindset. First, we have to believe it in our mind. Only then we will be able to progress to the next step. OK, so identify the requisite requirements for the mindset change. OK, next is your establish the KPIs for long and short term success. So what are the key performance indicators that are required for the long term success? And what are the key performance indicators that are required for short term? Okay, so there are a lot of things which are required, which will only enable you in a long term. So let's say a key account of 5 crores business to be acquired, it could be a length of say 3 to 6 months also. It's not a very short term goal. It could be a long term success, but that particular KPI may. There could be many more KPIs which would be required to get some shorter wins, which could be from which you can achieve shorter successes. All right. And then we have the 8th principle says that management should adopt the process of formal communication. Okay, so here you can see this. Management should adopt direct and personal communication. So if the management is letting the, have shared the strategic goals and the team is just implementing it, there are many levels in the organization and everybody is not even, part and get a preview to what is happening at the top management level. So then what happens at that point in time, these people would always, look for an opportunity to be able to hear from the management, to be able to hear from the horse's mouth what's going on. So it's always a fair idea on the management to take it into a communication level where they share their, direct and personal communication with their teams of people or employees in the organization. And the last but not the least, develop a plan to manage traditional risks. Okay, now what is it that you have planned to manage your traditional risk? So that there could be a multiple risk which are going to be associated while you are putting the design together. Yeah, so what is it the plan? What is the plan that you have to be able to manage those risks? So some traditional risk could be, high attrition. It could be low morale and motivation because there are a lot of changes which are happening and people are not very savvy to changes and they are not very open to changes also sometimes. So then what happens is, what are some of the risks that you take care of? Okay, so develop a plan to manage the traditional and the transitional risks. Okay, so now when you talk about transition, what so from X, when we talk about transition, it's an X and Y complete journey that we are talking about. So when we talk about this kind of a growth, say for example, we are at 2X business and we are looking at by the end of next 3 years, we are looking at 5X business. So if it's a 5X business, what is it that you need to transition from here to be able to scale up in such a fashion that you're able to provide and contribute to the expectation of the organization, which is the 5X business. All right, so that's the plan to manage the transitional role. Okay, so this McKinsey research has identified these golden rules for successful implementing successful organizational design in workplace. Okay, so these are some of the principles that a lot of organizations have implemented and have been swearing by, saying that this is the most appropriate model that has come by. Yeah, I hope everybody is clear with this. Thank you so much.